Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. Stick around for a while, okay? We're going to play an audio montage for you in a few minutes of some of the sound clips from newsmakers in the immediate days following Katrina's landfall 2 years ago. You'll hear George Bush, Laura Bush, the vampire Dick Cheney, Simple Scotty McClellan, the pigmaster Rush Limbaugh, Aaron Broussard, the president of Jefferson Parish, Louisiana. And we'll also have some of Bush's rosy rhetoric from his annual visit, the one he made today to, as he puts it, that part of the world. All this to share with you, and a few moron sounds for your listening pleasure tonight, too. So stick around. It will be an interesting evening. Richard Jewell was found dead in his house today. He was 44 years old, and he was working as a cop. Spokesman for the county coroner's office in the county where he died said Jewell died of natural causes. Now you may remember him. Richard Jewell was initially hailed as a hero for spotting what he thought was a suspicious backpack at the summer Atlanta Summer Olympics what became Olympic Park, and moving people out of harm's way just before the thing exploded during a concert 11 years ago. And everybody, for about 24 hours, praised him for his heroic act. And then the media, in this filthy toilet of a city, turned on him, called him a suspect. And immediately, Richard Jewell became, it was horrifying. It just is a classic example of what can happen to a person. As recently as last year, Jewell was working as a sheriff's deputy in Meriwether County over here, a rural part of Georgia, although 99% of Georgia is rural. And now he's dead. The blast killed one woman, injured 111 other people. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution started the feeding frenzy against this guy by describing him as the focus of an investigation. And then CNN, MSNBC, everybody climbed on board as quickly as they could, accusing Richard Jewell of being a possible suspect. 88 days after the initial reports that he was a suspect, then U.S. Attorney here in Atlanta, Kent Alexander, issued a statement saying Jewell, quote, is not a target, end quote. And that the, quote, unusual and intense publicity surrounding him was neither designed nor desired by the FBI and, in fact, interfered with the investigation, end quote. And as you probably know, eventually the bomber turned out to be the right-wing Nazi pig Eric Rudolph, who also planted three other bombs here in the Atlanta area and in Birmingham, Alabama, killed a police officer, maimed a nurse, injured others. Rudolph was captured after spending 5 years hiding like a rat in the mountains of North Carolina. He's serving life without parole. But Richard Jewell, I got an email from Martha who said, regarding Richard Jewell, it's a sad story. The man wrongfully accused of the Atlanta Olympics bombing, dying in his home. By the way, the suspected cause of his death is diabetes. And Martha writes, what relevance to today, you might ask, Richard Jewell's death? She goes on, I remember at the time seeing his face on the television and thinking, my God, the man looks guilty. Yep, they got the bad guy all right. Then learning how very wrong I and they really were. Martha writes, I wonder if in this day of no habeas corpus, I wonder if Mr. Jewell were of Arab descent, would the mistakes have ever been corrected? Or would have Mr. Jewell rotted in Guantanamo while Eric Rudolph, the guy who really did it, the hero of the right wing nuts in North Carolina or all over the South, where he hid out in the woods, would have gone on to bomb more public venues, more clinics where abortions might be performed, more gay bars. If I recall, Martha writes, there were two victims of that Olympics bombing, a British photographer who had a heart attack as a result, and a woman, the parent of a young child. I am the parent of a young child. You are too. I weep for that woman, for her child, and for Mr. Jewell. There is some justice in that Rudolph is doing hard time. But again, if it were happening now, if Mr. Jewell were of Arab descent, just a thought, Martha. Yeah, My, things have changed in 11 years, haven't they? Now, I had made a decision to stay the hell away from the Larry Craig story for a number of reasons, not the least of which it's rapidly turning into a story that I am not interested in at all. I do find it intriguing, though, that the pig Karl Rove, who used harassing gays as an election issue and pushing for these ridiculous constitutional amendments that'll never pass, and pushing for bigotry where it concerns someone's sexual orientation, all that stuff that Karl Rove and the Republican Party has done for the past 7 years, and the irony abounds, irony abides and abounds, like the dude. And the irony is that the people keep getting caught in this situation, Republicans. Have you noticed that? Huh? Karma? Justice? Call it whatever you want. But the aspect of the story that caught my attention was MSNBC's Tucker Carlson, the little twit with the bow tie who tries so hard to be so macho. Oh, my God. You know, even Dan Abrams is macho compared to Tucker. Even Wolf Blitzer, the former German U-boat commander and Mossad agent who works at CNN, is macho. Tucker is one of those guys who, no matter how hard he tries, no matter what he wears, no matter what he says, will never appear to be macho. He just appears to be kind of wimpish. Well, the other night on MSNBC Live, during a discussion about Larry Craig's arrest for whatever it was that he did or didn't do, Tucker Carlson got all macho in front of Joe Scarborough and Dan Abrams. Tucker got all macho and he said, here's what he said, quote, "Having sex in public men's rooms is outrageous. It's also really common. I've been bothered in men's rooms." So then Dan Abrams asked Tucker, what happened? You know, what do you mean being bothered? Then Tucker Carlson said, "Well, you know, somebody made a pass at me, and I went back with someone I knew and grabbed the guy by the, you know, and grabbed him and hit him against the wall with his head, actually. And, you know, then the cops came and arrested him. Yeah, I've been bothered in Georgetown Park when I was in high school. Yeah, I'm a tough son of a bitch. Them queers bother me. I'll beat their heads against the wall." Well, Tucker Carlson now has changed his statement just a tad. He issued a statement today. Here's what he said today. This is after an awful lot of comments about Tucker Carlson assaulting someone who may or may not have made a pass at him. Who knows? Tucker Carlson said he was in high school. Well, that was only a few years ago, what, 5, 6? So maybe he does remember. But here's his statement from today. "Let me be clear about an incident I referred to on MSNBC last night. In the mid-80s, while I was a high school student, a man physically grabbed me in a men's room in Washington, D.C. I yelled, pulled away from him, and ran out of the room. 25 minutes later, a friend of mine and I returned to the men's room. The man was still there, presumably waiting to do to someone else what he had done to me. My friend and I seized the man and held him until a security guard arrived. Several bloggers have characterized this as a sort of gay bashing. That's absurd. An insult to anybody who has fought back against an unsolicited sexual attack." Christ. "I wasn't angry with the man because he was gay. I was angry because he assaulted me." End quote. So this raises, a very, very straightforward question to me. Was Tucker Carlson lying last night, or did he lie today? Both stories can't be true. If he were, if the lies occurred last night, why did Tucker Carlson feel it necessary in the presence of Joe Scarborough, who's really tall, and Dan Abrams, who wears clothing really well, to come across like some kind of a macho freak? Because that's what macho is like to so many of these right-wingers. Go beat up a gay person. That makes you, you know, ballsy and macho and tough guy. So which statement is correct, Tucker, last night's or today's?
and your day screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Past the hour. Here's this little item that I saw today. Warming, global warming caused by human activity was the biggest factor in the high temperatures recorded last year, 2006. That's according to a report by those dumb old stupid old researchers and scientists at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. NOAA, remember NOAA? Huh? National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and God, that place must be populated by a bunch of fear-mongering commies. How dare them say it was caused by human activity? But they did. The analysis will run in the September issue of Geophysical Research Letters published by the American Geophysical Union. Oh, God! Limbaugh will tell you in a heartbeat that just that's a bunch of scaremongers, a bunch of communists, probably Arabs. In January, just passed, or 7 months ago, NOAA's National Climatic Data Center reported that 2006 was the warmest year on record over the 48 contiguous states in the United States, with an average temperature 2.1 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than normal and warmer than 1998, the previous warmest year on record. Remember when Rick Santorum tried to get legislation passed to abolish the National Weather Service? Remember that? What was that, a couple of years ago? Before the voters in Pennsylvania tossed him out on his ass. He was from Pennsylvania, wasn't he, Santorum? God, how quickly we forget. But remember Santorum wanted to abolish, he was, I guess it was somebody else, but the reason, the rationale behind it, or at least the stated rationale, was that there were entities out there, private entities, like, oh, I don't know, the Weather Channel or whatever, who could provide this service for a fee. And why should the National Weather Service be putting out daily reports and weather this and weather that and all this nonsense, which would just tend to, you know, upset people? Let's get rid of it. Remember that? Oh, my God, these Republicans are disgusting. Oh, and we reported the other night about the arrest of the seven or eight Iranians in Baghdad. Remember, they got busted at their hotel, the Sheraton Ishtar Hotel. U.S. military has admitted to what it calls a regrettable incident. Is that like saying you're sorry? After it arrested these Iranians, they've released them. They were freed after the Iraqi government intervened. You know, the soon-to-be disappeared Iraqi government, Nouri al-Maliki. Iran says the men were in the city at the invitation of Iraq's government and that the U.S. action was unjustified. An aide to the top U.S. commander in Iraq, I guess that would be the apple polisher, David Petraeus, later said the U.S. accepted that the Iranians were on official business. The Iranians were stopped. They were detained after they'd been stopped in the company of Iraqis carrying what says here were unauthorized weapons. What the hell are unauthorized weapons? It's their country, isn't it? Oh, that's right. It's under occupation by the imperialist United States of America. That's right. In the possession of the Iraqis was an AK-47 assault rifle and two pistols. So the entire group, seven Iraqis, eight Iranians, was taken to the Sheraton Ishtar, where U.S. troops searched the Iranians' rooms. What do you want to bet they didn't have a search warrant? Well, they don't need one. We don't do that kind of nonsense anymore, and we're the occupying army. We can do what we damn well please, whenever we please. They seized a computer, seized mobile phones, and seized a briefcase full of money. Oh, Christ, really? The men were taken away for questioning with video footage showing soldiers leading them out blindfolded in handcuffs. And several hours later, all the Iranians were handed over to the Iraqi government. You notice what's going on here? Iran and Iraq are becoming buddies, allies, which they damn well should be. They're mostly Shia, at least the ruling clique in both countries is Shia, and would have been had it not been for Saddam Hussein invading Iran at the insistence of George Bush and Ronald Reagan back in the 80s. You remember that, don't you? You don't remember that? Oh, damn. Well, It really happened. And it was a 6-year, or was it 8-year, long war of attrition between Iran and Iraq that the United States and Israel just sat back and applauded and cheered and funded and armed. Hell, we provided weapons to the Iranians and intelligence to the Iraqis during the Iran-Iraq war. We loved it. Oh my God, Muslims killing Muslims? Wunderbar! Ja, das ist gut! And of course the Israelis, they were just thrilled. Absolutely thrilled. So, the fact that Iran and Iraq are becoming buddies, friends. Ahmadinejad said the other day, of course he's a lying rat bastard, but he said, we would like to see Iraq settle down. We would like to help stabilize the country. Why, of course he would, because he will, if Iran and Iraq ever get stabilized and successful, they will immediately nuke Israel, destroy Saudi Arabia, blow up Egypt, and attack United Arab Emirates and poison, what's the other one? Kuwait. Right? Isn't that what they do? Isn't that what devils do?
We want to work cooperatively with these countries in their efforts to reduce greenhouse emissions.
It's 25 before the hour. Damn it, now I have to go back to this Tucker Carlson beating up the gay man in the bathroom after the gay man made a pass of some sort at Tucker Carlson. I have to go back to it because now... BB just sent me an email here, subject line, Tucker is a liar, and BB is quoting something from Wikipedia, and I went and checked it. Now, Tucker Carlson says that when he was in high school in Washington, D.C., he was bothered in Georgetown Park and beat up a gay man who made a pass at him. But it says here, you see, Tucker Carlson is from a very wealthy family. It says here that... first of all, his father was ambassador to the, was it, I can never pronounce Sakels? He was an ambassador. So his parents sent him to St. George's School, it's a boarding school in Middletown, Rhode Island. That's where he went to high school, in Rhode Island. And his summers were spent at the family estate in Orange County, California. And he went to a private liberal arts college, Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut. And yet Tucker Carlson says he went to high school, or I'm assuming that's what he said. He said, when I was in high school in Washington, D.C. But according to this, he didn't go to high school. Oh, Tucker. Oh, Tucker! Be careful! And Mike in St. Paul says, I find it interesting, Mike, that Tucker last night claimed to have grabbed his assaulter in his nether region as a matter of self-defense. Perhaps Tucker let too much slip out in his alleged victimization rant on MSNBC. Who knows? Who cares? It's just that every right-winger, even the cute boys like Tucker Carlson, every right-winger is a liar. Every right-winger is a coward and has got to claim some sort of macho identification. And in the militant right, in the wealthy militant right from which Tucker Carlson comes, assaulting a gay person is considered, that's making your bones. Once you have attacked a gay man, who may have made a pass at you, so what, because you're cute... In the same way that a guy who is not gay will make a pass at a cute girl, cute guy, cute girl, a pass, what the hell's the difference? But in Tucker's world, in the world of right-wing wealthy people, of Tucker's sort, whether you actually do it or not is beside the point. But you claim to have assaulted or hit or beat up or grabbed the crotch of at least one gay person. Preferably a gay man, and usually a gay man who, made a pass at you. When I was 17, Tucker, and had a pass made at me by a gay man, I went along with it. Wasn't bad. It's a little scary, but it wasn't bad. I beat him up! I went back to that bathroom and grabbed him where, you know, the sun don't shine, and me and a buddy of mine, and punched his head against the wall. Wait a minute. No, I didn't. I was just kidding last night. But I'm macho. Even though I look kind of light in my loafers, I'm macho. I'm beat up queers. Remember Condoleezza Rice? Anybody seen her lately? This is great. I guess I got this from Media, not Media Matters, Think Progress? I don't know. It says in his upcoming biography of Condoleezza Rice, Washington Post correspondent Glenn Kessler shows how the Secretary of State, quote, has lost none of her bluntness, end quote, while working, quote, hard to soften her edges, end quote. In one anecdote revealed by the writer, Kessler, Rice dressed down a jewelry store clerk who gave her less than satisfactory service. Here's the excerpt from the book. Coit Blacker, a Stanford professor who is one of the Secretary of State's closest friends, recalls going into a shop where Miss Rice asked to see some earrings. The clerk showed her costume jewelry. Rice asked to see something nicer, prompting the clerk to whisper some sass under her breath. And at that point, Coit Blacker, a Stanford professor and a good friend, one of Rice's closest friends, remembers Rice tearing the woman to shreds, quote, "Let's get one thing straight," he recalls her saying. "You are behind the counter because you have to work for minimum wage. I'm on this side asking to see the good jewelry because I make considerably more," end quote. The manager of the store quickly brought Condoleezza Rice better baubles. Oh, my God. Man or monkey? Yeah, there he was, second anniversary of Katrina, making his annual pilgrimage down to that part of the world to see them people who, stuck down there. Damn. Let me play some Man or Monkey for you real quick here, and then I want to talk about this a little bit. Each year he travels to the Gulf Coast and spouts the same empty rhetoric, the same nonsense. The people down there, I guess for the most part, the ones who aren't dumbstruck by his presence, like the Queen of Creole, who I'll talk about that later. The same empty rhetoric. Today he visited a charter school and talked about how, even though he didn't live there, I don't live here, New Orleans was a great place to be. And just when you think this jackass's main delusions are centered on Iraq.
And so it's, my attitude is this: New Orleans, better days are ahead.
Oh, thank you, Jesus.
It's sometimes hard for people to see progress when you live in a community all the time.
Yeah.
Laura and I get to come, we don't live here.
Yeah.
We come on occasion.
Uh-huh.
And it's easy to think about what it was like when we first came here after the hurricane.
Yeah.
And what it's like today. And this town's coming back. This town is better today than it was yesterday. And it's going to be better tomorrow than it was today.
Let me write that down. This town is better today than it was yesterday, and it's going to be better tomorrow than it was today. And next week will be better than last week, and the 4th of October will be better than the 4th of May. Jesus. New Orleans, better days are ahead. Now, he's still referring to the Gulf Coast as this part of the world as if he's not the president of Louisiana or Mississippi. Well, bite your tongue, Malloy. What is our children learning about geography when the president doesn't seem to comprehend that Mississippi and Louisiana are actually part of the United States? What was that young girl from South Carolina the other day trying to answer a question about why people can't find America, United States, that is, on a map? And she tried to answer. All she had to do is listen to this jackass.
The taxpayers, people from all around the country, have got to understand the people of this part of the world really do appreciate the fact that the American citizens are supportive of the recovery effort. A lot of people down here probably wondered whether or not those of us in the federal government not from Louisiana would pay attention to Louisiana or Mississippi. In other words, one thing to come and give a speech in Jackson Square, it's another thing to keep paying attention to whether or not progress is being made. And I hope people understand we do. We're still paying attention. We understand.
Yeah, that infamous compassion of yours is just pouring out, isn't it? This is amazing. It's like, you know, this guy is really schizophrenic. It's like he's talking about someone else went to Jackson Square 17 days after the tragedy 2 years ago. Someone else, not him. In other words, it's one thing to come and give a speech in Jackson Square. It's another thing to keep paying attention to whether or not progress is being made. And I hope people understand, yeah, we're paying attention. That's all it takes. We're paying attention. You're coming back. You're doing great. He says the people in that part of the world really do appreciate the fact that the American citizens, well, are supportive of the recovery effort. What are the people in that part of the world, as he puts it? You people down here in this part of the world, you know, American citizens are really trying to help you out. What a dumbass. Hey, chuckle nuts. The hurricane victims are American citizens, too. I don't want to upset your visit. My God, this man is dumb. One more. Little theater of the absurd for comic relief about how much he cares about, wait for it, books! Looks like he thinks the children of that part of the world are illiterate and he's upset about the waterlogged libraries. So many books were destroyed without him even getting a chance to color in a single one of them.
Laura and I care a lot about the libraries.
Yeah.
That's why we dedicate in books. We're proud to be a part of the rebuilding of this library.
Tell us a story.
I'll never forget one time when I was governor of Texas, a woman looked at me and she said, reading is the new civil right.
Wow.
It had a profound impact on the policies that we have pursued since I've been in public office and Laura's pursued as a lifelong reader. And that person was right. We've got to start making sure these youngsters can read.
You know, Laura gave up on my book reading a long time ago. But Laura, that's her over there, she's been a lifelong reader. We care about libraries. I love library. That's why we're dedicating books. I'm a library book dedicator in addition to being a decider. My God. I wonder how heavily guarded he was today. I'm sure he was just surrounded by Blackwater and Dine Corps and paratroopers and helicopters and, let's see, it was in New Orleans, so offshore a couple of submarines, a couple of SEAL assault teams were on the standby, probably some Army Rangers were sitting over a little bit, maybe over in Mobile. There's a new report by the Institute for Southern Studies called Blueprint for Gulf Renewal. You can see this report at southernstudies.org, and then look around for it, southernstudies.org. I want to quote you a couple things out of that report, not the dry, dull stuff. I've got the good stuff, okay? Southernstudies.org, it's called Blueprint for Gulf Renewal. The truth about what's going on, billions of dollars are missing. Oh, my God, really, Mike? Yes. Well, that's just like Iraq. Yes. Looks bad, just have to wait. Forgetting folks were too broke to evacuate. Niggas starving and they dying of thirst. I really had to go and check on them refineries first. Making a killing off the price of gas. He would have been up in Connecticut twice as fast. After all that we've been through, nothing's changed. You can call Red Cross, but the fact remains that George Bush. Thank you.
out of this chaos is going to come a fantastic Gulf Coast.
Well, at least for your right-wing buddies, like Trent Lott ever get his house rebuilt again? I bet he did.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm.
Bush insists the federal government has fulfilled its promise to rebuild the region. The proof, he says, is in the big check the federal government signed to underwrite the recovery, allegedly more than $116 billion. Oh, my God! Stanley Zerwinski of the Government Accountability Office, which is Congress's investigative arm, says $116 billion is not a useful number. For starters, most federal money, about two-thirds, was quickly spent for short-term needs like debris removal and Coast Guard rescue. And as Mr. Zerwinski explains, quote, there's a significant difference between responding to an emergency and rebuilding post-disaster, end quote. According to the report from southernstudies.org, that has left little money for long-term Gulf Coast recovery projects from the federal government. Of course, 13 or 11 of the 13 gambling casinos on the Mississippi coast are back up again. Of course, the state of Mississippi, certain parts of it, thanks to Haley Barbour, and Haley Barbour being who Haley Barbour is, has received attention. Little money left for long-term Gulf Coast recovery projects, federal money. Although it's tricky, it says here, to unravel the maze of federal reports, our best estimate of agency data is that only $35 billion has been appropriated for long-term rebuilding. $35 billion. That's what, a fifth? No, a third of that 116? Even worse, it says here, less than 42% of the money, less than 42% of the money set aside has even been spent, much less gotten to those most in need. For example, the Bush crime family set aside $16.7 billion for community development block grants, one of the two biggest sources of rebuilding funds, especially for housing. But as of March 2007, only a billion, 6%, had been spent, almost all of it in, well, here's a surprise, Mississippi. Following bad publicity, the Department of Housing and Urban Development spent another $3.8 billion on the program between March and July, leaving 70% of the funds still unused. Here's another bullet point. The other major source of rebuilding help was supposed to be FEMA's public assistance program. But of the $8.2 billion earmarked, only $3.4 billion was meant for non-emergency projects like fixing up schools and hospitals. Well, my goodness, George and Laura must have found one of those fixed-up schools today, didn't he? So he could talk about his dedication to books. Another bullet point. Louisiana officials recently testified that FEMA has also lowballed project costs, underestimating the true expenses by a factor of four or five. For example, the 11 Louisiana rebuilding projects, the lowest bids came to $5.5 million, but FEMA approved only $1.9 million. What does that mean? It means the project doesn't even start. Another bullet point. After the failure of federal levees flooded 80% of New Orleans, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers received $8.4 billion to restore storm defenses. But as of July 2007, less than 20% of the funds have been spent, even as the Army Corps of Engineers admits that levee repair won't be completed until 2011. The report goes on, the fact that 2 years later most federal Katrina funds remain bottled up in bureaucracy is especially shocking, considering that the amounts Washington allocated come nowhere near the anticipated costs of Gulf rebuilding. Another example, the $3.4 billion FEMA has available to recover local public infrastructures would only cover about one-eighth of the damage suffered in Louisiana alone. But the money is spread over five states: Alabama, Florida, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas, and covers damage from three 2005 hurricanes, Katrina, Rita, and Wilma. You see how these rat bastards lie? You see what they do? The idea around New Orleans was to turn it from a majority black city into a majority white city. Because everybody knows Negroes vote Democrat and Caucasians vote Republican. That's what it was all about. That's what they decided to do. Let the colored people die. Let their bodies float. Let their houses disintegrate. Let their land disappear. Let their rental property go away forever. They're only colored people. We don't want them, we Republicans. Oh, let's not forget the Gulf Opportunity Zones, the go zones. $3.5 billion in tax breaks. Of course, some of that money has been used to build luxury condos near the University of Alabama. We talked about that, didn't we? Tanya Harris of the human rights organization ACORN in New Orleans, when asked about the $116 billion, had one question. Where'd it go? Tell me. Where'd it go? Urban renewal by other means. Coming up next hour, we have this montage we want you to hear, and also I have a letter from someone who just got back from there named Anne. You know, got back from that part of the world where American taxpayers have been helping those unfortunate people, whatever their nationality is, recover. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy.
Stephanie Miller Show, early weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on the Valley's Progressive Talk, 1480 KPHX. This is the...
Welcome back. Oh, before we get back to the Katrina thing, just a little drop-in thingy here. Bush is preparing to ask Congress for another $50 billion for his war in Iraq. Are you aware of that? The Washington Post reported today, citing a White House official, the additional funds would come on top of the nearly $500 billion 2008 fiscal year defense budget, and another $150 billion in a pending supplemental bill to fund the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. So the 150 he just got, and the $500 billion that we now spend on what? Who the hell are we defending against? The request is expected to be announced next month, after the top U.S. commander in Iraq, the apple-polishing General David Petraeus, and U.S. Ambassador Ryan Crocker report to Congress on the state of the war. $50 billion more. $150 billion in the pipeline. A half a trillion spent on so-called defense. I saw a report on, was it ABC Tonight, about in Putin's Russia, there's a very strong nationalism building up, and they have these camps now where teenagers go, kind of like the old Red Guards, and they are being told that the enemy is the great Satan, the United States. Scary times ahead, Truth Seeker. Okay. Letter from... Well, let me just read it to you. Email. This is from Ann. Dear Mr. Malloy, my name is Ann, and her last name. I would or will try to contact your program this evening. However, I fear that your lines will be inundated with callers who have a greater depth and breadth of experience, who would be more suitable to interview or have more to contribute than I would on the second anniversary of Katrina. I began traveling to the Mississippi Gulf region after hearing Sarge speak on your program about the ongoing plight faced by these brave survivors. and the deplorable conditions they continue to face. I don't expect you remember me. I used to listen to you on WLS in Chicago before it was taken over by right-wing fanatics. But it was only through your generosity in putting me in touch with Sarge and his helping me to network with the various organizations, TLC, Mississippi Home Again, Jackson County Community Service Coalition, Red Cross, etc., and their generosity that I was introduced to and interviewed some of the most courageous people it has ever been my great fortune to meet. Whenever you doubt the good... whenever you doubt the good you and Kathy do, please remember this. Were it not for you, your show, your voice, I would never have known about the conditions I have been able to observe, write about, and in some small way, hopefully ameliorate, even if it's only by my listening or presence. Although I initially began my visits to conduct research looking for evidence of PTSD in the elderly, while working on my master's thesis, it was inevitable that the stories of the elderly, their lives, their children, grandchildren, sisters, brothers, friends, and neighbors would produce a complex tapestry of events that preceded the hurricane, blending their lives into compartments of before, during, and after, stories that were impossible to ignore. I just arrived back in Chicago from my last visit this Saturday evening, and as I sit and watch the news coverage from the comfort of my home, I vacillate between tears and fury. I watch this so-called decider enjoy his phony photo ops. My revulsion for this poor excuse of human life is bottomless. How dare he appear in the region now? How dare he say things are improving? Let him or his lapdogs take a ride around with me in my rental car and visit the people in their homes or trailers 2 years on. Broken promise after broken promise. Broken lives, broken hearts, lost loved ones, displaced jobs, schools, health care. Too bad Bush and his minions didn't have the time to spend in the 130-degree trailer without air conditioning with me last week. Too bad he didn't have the pleasure of sitting in the home that sat without hot water for some 18 months and could use some of Laura's solar panels to cool the patchwork that now remains of this old woman's home. I wonder if he would have shed a tear or said one of his prayers for the useless loss of children and elderly who succumbed after the storms, people who lived lives, had dreams, wants, needs, good, decent people who are never looking for a handout, who just wanted what we all want, dignity. Is it a shame he couldn't hear about the people who still live in want, need, the disabled, the disenfranchised, the hungry, the lonely, those who ration medicine? I could go on. When will this nightmare end? I'm sure my rage is palpable. Each time I leave Mississippi, I feel like I should have done more. I wish I could do more. I weep when I watch my tapes and view my photographs. If only I had more money, more time, more resources, stature, whatever it takes. But it seems that the supposed most powerful man in the world, who possesses all the onlys I just mentioned, can only make cursory appearances and empty promises. He who supposedly is all-powerful must be spirited away for his own security. Curiously, I have more freedom than he does. The survivors have more freedom. I guess some things really can't be bought. How crushing, how disgraceful, how shamed I feel for this once great country. In closing, I just wanted to thank you again for assisting me in beginning my journey into the lives of the people of Mississippi. My father's a retired fire captain from Chicago, and honestly, Mr. Malloy, I thought I knew what real courage, humility, compassion, and true dedication to service looked like. Not just in the theoretical sense, but experientially through my father's example and valor. But now, I know that I had only sampled these qualities. I tasted them for the first time through the lives, stories, and generosity of the volunteers and survivors I met in Mississippi. There are no adequate words to describe the esteem I have for all of them. Those who toil endlessly, never expecting thanks or praise, and those who wait, never expecting more than what was promised to them. You need to keep it lit tonight, Mike. My tears are extinguishing the candle. Sincerely, Anne. And those first-person accounts can go on and on, right? Wow. But Chucklenuts was down there today telling the folks that he sees hope in New Orleans. Yes, I do. I see hope. There's no better place to do so than in a place of hope, and that's a school, he said. Hurricane Katrina broke the levees, he said. It broke a lot of hearts, he said. It destroyed buildings, he said, but it didn't affect the spirit of a lot of citizens in this community, he said. The Times-Picayune of New Orleans ran a front-page editorial today accusing the Bush administration of steering more money to Mississippi than to Louisiana, where the damage was greater, and questioned whether Louisiana was being shortchanged because Democrats are more powerful there than in Mississippi. Of course, Bush did carry Louisiana in 2004, as he did in 2000. That's the way it works when you can steal votes. It's just incredible. What a scar on America forever. This will never, ever go away. This horrible, destructive scar in that part of the world, as Bush puts it, it's never going to go away. Before Chucklenuts went to that part of the world, the White House issued a fact sheet, quote-quote, detailing $114 billion in relief to the region, not counting $13 more billion in tax relief. The president's Gulf Coast rebuilding chief, Mr. Don Powell, told reporters that $96 billion of that aid had already been made available to local governments. Yes, indeed. Well, then I guess the report from which I was quoting is all lies, right? Sure it is. The Bush crime family is telling the truth. And the extensive report detailing what has happened to the money, billions missing, that's all lies. That's all lies. However, Mr. Don Powell, the president's Gulf Coast rebuilding chief, referencing the complaints that not enough money has reached the people who need it quickly enough, well, Mr. Don Powell implied that local officials were at least partly to blame. Yes, sir. We'll be back right after the break. I'm Mike Malloy, and how long is that montage? 5 minutes? You want to play it when we come back? All right, stick around. We want you to hear this when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Well, one day soon, that dam is gonna break, and it'll wash you away, it'll wash you away. Yeah, one day soon.
Our young entrepreneur, be an exciting place.
Can't imagine what it's like to be waving a sign that said, come and get me now. I mean, if people need water and food, we're going to do everything we can to get them water and food.
Past the hour. 2 years to the day after the storm ravaged the city. We're talking about New Orleans. 2 years to the day after the storm ravaged New Orleans, here's a look at some of the key indicators in the rebuilding effort. Where it concerns flood protection, this is from McClatchy Newspapers. It has been predicted it'll cost between $2 and $4 billion to rebuild New Orleans' flood protection system to a minimal 100-year flood level, with better floodgates, pumps, and walls. To actually guard against the most dangerous Category 5 hurricanes will cost, quote, much, much more, end quote, said a panel of experts called Team Louisiana that was assembled by Louisiana State University. In June 2006, Congress allocated $3.1 billion to the cause, including $170 million for armoring the levees with materials such as concrete slabs and wire baskets filled with rock. The Corps of Engineers has predicted that work on the levees will not be completed till at least 2011, leaving the residents of New Orleans to worry about what will happen if another powerful hurricane hits before then. Medical care. That's flood protection. Here's medical care. Before the storm, New Orleans had 23 major hospitals and other medical facilities. According to the report, as of last month, 10 remain closed, including acute care hospitals, psychiatric clinics, and long-term disability and rehab facilities. The slow recovery in the availability of health care is especially disturbing since, quote, the New Orleans area struggles with an increased prevalence of mental illness, acute conditions, and death, end quote. St. Bernard Parish, remember that? The one hardest hit by Katrina, still does not have a single hospital in operation. Not one. The justice system. The report says, quote, crime remains unacceptably high in the city, eliciting real and legitimate concerns from residents and business owners. The reasons are multifaceted, not just limited to the level of policing, but one critical aspect is that officers continue to work out of stations that remain in disrepair from Katrina. Police headquarters, two substations, and departments such as traffic enforcement, recruiting, special ops, and the juvenile division continue to work out of FEMA trailers. Crucial evidence in criminal cases is also kept in trailers, unprotected, in the event of a significant wind event, and the city's all-important crime lab is only partially functional. Such conditions, which include little space to interrogate suspects in crimes and interview victims, undermines the quality of police officers in a city where they are badly needed. Not good. Public schools. 70% of students have returned to classrooms in the metro area, but that proportion drops to 40% in New Orleans itself, where fewer than half the schools have reopened. An even smaller percentage of black students has returned to city classrooms, while a greater number of Hispanic students are attending schools in Jefferson and St. Tammany parishes. Disturbingly, the report said, quote, student achievement has declined across the region, likely reflecting stresses and learning interruptions related to the disaster, end quote. Jobs and employers. Hurricane Katrina washed away 118,500 jobs in New Orleans area, primarily in healthcare, education, and tourism, and 4,000 businesses were shuttered. In the past 10 months, 17,000 of those jobs have been regained. Of 118,000, 17,000 have been regained, putting the area's job force at 80% of what it was before the storm. The most recent available data showed that in the fall of 2008, 72% of the employer base had returned to the city and 85% had returned to the area. Recovery efforts have fueled job opportunities and helped push wages upward since the storm in almost all categories. Well, that's good. Housing. More than 5,500 housing units have been demolished in Orleans since Hurricane Katrina, 91% of them in Orleans Parish, a central part of the city that was among the hardest hit by the storm and subsequent flooding. Home prices have increased 25% in places where recovery efforts are strong and housing is in short supply, while in areas of continued devastation, such as the Ninth Ward, home prices have dropped as much as 40%. Water system. New Orleans has an ancient network of water pipes, prompting fears that a major leak could cause a significant citywide drop in pressure and contaminate tap water. The population in New Orleans is down 53.9%. It goes on and on. What a disgrace. What an absolute disgrace. New Orleans, and I realize Mississippi, the southern coast of the coast of Mississippi was devastated too. I understand. But when you think about New Orleans, and the fact that a city like that was, that the Bush crime family must have been relieved to see it destroyed. Relieved. We'll be back with that sound montage right after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Good folks, must understand that major refineries have been shut down, which means it's going to be hard to get gasoline to some markets.
you got a fantastic opportunity. And out of those huge heaps of timber that used to be homes, a better Mississippi will emerge.
Out of the huge heaps of timbers that used to be homes? You miserable bastard, you. 25 before the hour. Suzanne in L.A. sends me a quote here from Nancy Scola at Huffington Post. Here's the quote. Are we perfectly comfortable moving on to August 30th when New Orleans sits stuck on the 29th?
If it keeps on raining, that bitch gonna break.
Each of us who have children know what it's like to lose your child for a minute in a department store, so we can imagine what these families are feeling and what they're thinking.
We have been abandoned by our own country.
Yes, sir. Our gasoline station up and running. Progress is being made.
Death toll is way, way, way below what projections were.
Tuesday morning, I opened newspapers and saw headlines that said New Orleans dodged the bullet.
I myself thought we had dodged the bullet.
When that storm came through at first, people said, whew. There was a sense of relaxation. There was a sense of relaxation at a moment, a critical moment.
When you think about taking your own child to the grocery store and getting separated from them in the grocery store, you can imagine what it would be like.
10,000 deaths minimum, said the mayor. Body bags for 25,000 are being flown into the region. Blah, 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 blah.
I think the progress we're making is significant. We've now got a major National Guard presence in virtually every community in Mississippi south of
920. What I intend to do is lead an investigation to find out what went right and what went wrong.
We had Walmart deliver 3 trucks of water. FEMA turned them back. They said we didn't need it.
We didn't know about this in the White House.
The left is dancing on the graves of black people.
I don't think anybody anticipated the breach of the levees.
When I said to the president that he should fire Michael Brown because of all that went wrong, with all that didn't go right last week, and he said, what didn't go right?
It's very important for us to understand the relationship between the federal government, the state government, the local government.
Oblivious, in denial, dangerous.
FEMA comes in and cuts all of our emergency communication lines.
We got to solve problems.
The Coast Guard said, come get the fuel right away. When we got there with our trucks, they got a word. FEMA says, don't give you the fuel.
We're problem solvers.
We're going to solve these problems. What I'm interested in is solving problems. We're moving on. We're going to solve these problems.
We are focused on solving problems. We're focused on solving problems. The president is interested in solving problems. We've got problems to solve, Bob. Bob, we've got problems to solve.
I, as president, am responsible for the problem.
What people want us to do here is to play a blame game.
I know some just want to engage in the blame game, playing the blame game.
A hurricane hit New Orleans. George Bush is in Washington. How can he possibly be to blame for this?
Plenty of time to play the blame game.
Play the blame game, trying to finger point. I'm just not going to engage in the blame game or finger pointing that you're trying to get me to engage in. What you're doing is trying to engage in a game of finger pointing and blame gaming. Time for bickering and blame gaming is later.
The aftermath of Katrina has proven to be a godsend.
We want the Mississippi people to lay out the Mississippi vision about what this important part of the world is going to look like.
We look forward to hearing your vision so we can more better do our job.
Around the country, children who've been displaced because of Hurricane Katrina are starting to school this week.
Information I've received from locals is definitely very impressive.
Go yourself, Mr. King.
I also want to encourage anybody who was affected by Hurricane Katrina to make sure their children are in school.
Nobody's coming to get us. Nobody's coming to get us.
Life's not easy.
Somebody's coming to get you on Tuesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Wednesday.
Mardi Gras in September, the big easy.
Somebody's coming to get you on Thursday. Somebody's coming to get you on Friday.
Liberals are dancing the Cajun reel with thousands of grinning skeletons.
The secretary has promised. Everybody's promised. They've had press conferences.
We're working to help these pipelines get up and running. Pipelines carry refined product.
For God's sakes, shut up and send us somebody.
Particularly spent a lot of time talking about the damage done to our energy infrastructure and its effect on the availability and price of gasoline.
Yeah, Mama, somebody's coming to get you.
Well, who wants to be depressed? So what we choose to do is just laugh at these yokels.
She drowned Friday night. She drowned Friday night.
Making their bed, they can lay in it. They're taking their shower, they can drown in it.
Out of the rubbles of Trent Lott's house, his hat lost his entire house, there's going to be a fantastic house, and I'm looking forward to sitting on the porch.
If it keeps on raining, love is going to break. When the levee breaks, have no place to stay.
You know, sometimes I wish Rush Limbaugh would choke to death on his next plate of crab legs with OxyContin on the side. I really do. What a vicious, vile, hate-filled man. And I normally don't wish people dead. I mean, it's, you know, that's so five-year-old, isn't it? Huh? But when I hear Rush Limbaugh's voice and his point of view, I just wish he'd choke to death. It's pretty astonishing. When we play that, as we've played it before, all those voices, with one or two exceptions, people who didn't care. What does Laura Bush call it? Hurricane Corina? People who don't care. People like the evil bitch who produced these Bush boys, who made the statement that living in a gymnasium in Houston was easy for these Negroes and white trashy people because, well, hell, back in New Orleans, what did they have? They're just living in shacks back there. And remember Tom DeLay, that filthy, filthy bastard walking through the same gymnasium, asking little Negro boys, well, it's like camp, isn't it? Huh? Come here, let me rub your head. That brings white people good luck. Come here, get over here, boy. What's your name? Filthy, filthy pigs.
Did you have a puppy? Did it live?
Man. You know what can you say? What can anybody say? About the people in Mississippi who are still waiting. People in Louisiana who are still waiting. Still waiting. 2 years in. 2 years. Can you imagine this happening in some other industrialized country? Pick one. Japan? Germany? The UK? Scandinavian countries? Spain? Can you imagine that 2 years on, it would still be this kind of grief and chaos and death and devastation and no health care and no infrastructure? This filthy Bush administration, these filthy pigs, every single thing they touch turns to dirt. Every single responsibility they were given by the United States Supreme Court, they have screwed up. It's just unbelievable. Every single thing they touch turns to filth. Every place Bush goes, a trail of death, destruction, chaos, ugliness, hatred. And all those people in New Orleans who are living in rental property in the Ninth Ward, in Jefferson Parish, all the people who are living, home ownership in New Orleans was for a certain income group, well, come on, Beloit, a certain racial group was almost out of the question. So they had rental houses where, you know, the grandparents had rented the houses, and then the parents, and now the kids in their 20s and 30s and 40s, renting the same houses, rental property. When the rental property is gone, what the hell? What are they supposed to do? Where do they go? Well, they don't go home. They stay here in Atlanta, or they stay in Houston, or they move to farm country in Iowa? Yeah. But they can't go home. They can't go home now. They can't go home 10 years from now. Because they're poor. The skills they had were marketable to a degree in New Orleans, but outside of New Orleans, what are they going to do? And they're dark-skinned, so you know what that means, right? Of course you do. What an incredibly unfathomable insanity involved where it concerns the Bush administration's schizophrenic doublespeak about New Orleans. Well, you can't just come down here and stay in Jackson Square. You got to do something. Really? We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Out of the rubbles of Trent Lott's house, his had lost his entire house, there's going to be a fantastic house. You're going to have yourself a building boom. You watch. It's going to be an exciting time for people. They're going to be work. People are going to be working hard here. And it's a fantastic opportunity. It's going to be an exciting time down here, just so long as you're able to get enough material.
We meet half in our city. We meet a lot of help people in our town.
It's about 10 before the hour. All right, we have one more piece that we want to play for you. This is both the decider and Ray Nagin, the mayor of New Orleans. And we're going to play this one for you. It runs just under 5 minutes. And then when we come back after the break at the top of the hour, we're going to take some phone calls. So stick around. Here is the other piece that Kathy put together.
I'm not looking forward to this trip. I got a feel for it when I flew over before.
This flying over in Air Force One does not do it justice. And then I have been all around this city, and I am very frustrated because we are not able to marshal resources, and we're outmanned in just about every respect.
Looking forward to my trip down there. I'm looking forward to talking to the people on the ground.
You know the reason why the looters got out of control? Because we had most of our resources saving people, thousands of people. That was stuck in attics, man, old ladies. When you pull off the doggone ventilator vent and you look down there and they're standing in there in water up to their freaking neck.
We are going to restore order in the city of New Orleans.
People of this country expect there to be law and order, zero tolerance.
I need reinforcements. I need troops, man. This is a national disaster. Get every doggone Greyhound bus line in the country and get their asses moving to New Orleans.
Thousands of people's lives have been saved immediately, and that's good news. Fellow citizens must understand that we're talking years. Now, we're not talking years to get to people rescued. We're talking days. You know, I am satisfied with the response. It's good news.
You know, God is looking down on all this. And if they are not doing everything in their power to save people, they are going to pay the price. Because every day that we delay, people are dying.
I got some good news on the pipeline. We thought it would be at 47% capacity. It's going to be significantly more than that, which is good news. The EPA suspended rules so that we could use types of gasoline which attracted fuel from overseas. That's good.
I told everybody the importance of the 17th Street Canal issue. We say, please, please take care of this. We don't care what you do. Figure it out.
Who'd you say that to?
Homeland Security, FEMA, you name it, we said it. And, you know, they allowed that pumping station next to it, Pumping Station 6, to go underwater.
We've got a job to defend this country in the war on terror, and we've got a job to bring aid and comfort to the people of the Gulf Coast. We've got plenty of resources to do both. And we'll secure our country from the terrorists, and we'll help rebuild this part of the world.
There is nothing happening. And they're feeding the public a line of bull, and it's spinning, and people are dying down here.
Again, I want to thank you all. And Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. The FEMA director's working 24. They're working 24 hours a day.
The results are acceptable in New Orleans when it comes to the hard work of the Coast Guard.
We authorized $8 billion to go to Iraq. Lickety quick. After 9/11, we gave the president unprecedented powers to take care of New York and other places. Now, you mean to tell me that a place where you probably have thousands of people that have died and thousands more that are dying every day, that we can't figure out a way to authorize the resources that we need?
I don't think anybody can be prepared for the vastness of this destruction. Listen, we're going to have a problem this weekend when it comes to gasoline. Just like they got a problem here.
I don't want to see anybody do any more goddamn press conferences.
These are tough times. You know, there's a lot of sadness, of course. But there's also a spirit here that is uplifting.
Put a moratorium on press conferences. Don't do another press conference until the resources are in this city.
You know, this is a huge task that we're dealing with. The good news is we know what we're going to do, and we're going to get it done.
It's too doggone late. Get off your asses and let's do something, and let's fix the biggest goddamn crisis in the history of this country.
The good news is, and it's hard for some to see it now, that out of this chaos is going to come a fantastic Gulf Coast, like it was before. Out of the rubbles of Trent Lott's house, his had lost his entire house, there's going to be a fantastic house, and I'm looking forward to sitting on the porch.
Looking forward to sitting on the porch. Just stunning. Just mind-bending. Mind-bending. Stunning. It's hard for me. I don't know about you, truth seeker, but it's hard for me to realize that the devastation that occurred 2 years ago, a huge, huge segment of the population, you talk about a diaspora, people who have been flung all around this country, away from their homes, away from their friends, their churches, their schools, their doctors, their lawyers, their social network, everything. Just gone. Could you handle that and not go crazy? I'll tell you something. I could not. No. I would be dead now. That's right. No, I know my limits. To be flung away from the center like that with the centrifugal force of the idiocy of George W. Bush and this filthy, corrupt Republican Party and this filthy Republican administration, to be flung away like that. And I saw some of those images again today from the Superdome. Holy God in heaven. And I was watching that today, sitting there saying, no, that did not happen. Not in the United States of America. No, that didn't happen. That's a scene from somewhere else. That's a scene from some country that doesn't have an infrastructure and doesn't have a government and doesn't have relief agencies and doesn't tax its citizens and doesn't give a goddamn about its citizens. That's where that's from. That couldn't be from here. That's not from here. Yeah, it was. And yeah, it is. I hope we can get through the next 16, 17 months until this filthy, corrupt administration is gone. I still don't understand why Pelosi and Reid say impeachment's off the table, but what do I know? Top of the hour break here. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Final hour coming up. We'll take your phone calls. Stay with us.
I can remember coming here the times I came and looked hard in people's eyes and saw a sense of desperation and worry and deep, deep concern about the future. It's good to see, be able to look in people's eyes and not see them all bloodshot.
By in the way of, let's say, oh, I don't know, body armor.
The Randy Rhoads Show, weekdays from noon to 3 on the Valley's Progressive Talk, 1480 KPHX. This
drunk
You can sing along.
In my way to be free. Like a fish on a hook. Like a knife from an old-fashioned book.
Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program on Nova M Radio. We are ready to take some phone calls here. Before we do, I don't know if I got this from Paul Krugman or somebody sent me an email or what. It just slips my mind right now. But I had a thought the other day about the need for and lack of universal health care in this country. You know what kind of a question I'd like to see presented to all of the candidates for president, even the dumbass Republicans who are not going to hold the White House probably for the next 20 years. And also the Democrats, most of whom are not terribly unlike the Republicans, these candidates. But how many are there? 15, 16 of these candidates. The next time they have one of these cheesy-ass staged fake forums where they all stand out there, I would like to see whoever it is asking the questions to ask each one of these candidates this question. Can you tell us who in this country you feel should not be receiving health care, health insurance? Is it the children? We have what, 9, 11, 14 million, whatever the number is, children. Is it old people? Is it the working poor? Is it the middle class? Is it right-handed women who work in factories? Is it office managers who happen to be male? Who define for us the people in this country whom you believe do not deserve single-payer, universal health care, where when they are sick, when they need preventive medicine, when they need their shots, when they need their exams, when they need their checkups, they should not be allowed to go get them? Who? Now tell us who. Senator Clinton, Senator Obama, Senator this, Senator that, Representative Kucinich, all of you, tell us who these people are. What people? There are 47 million uninsured Americans and probably another 50 million who are underinsured, insured, and another 50 million who are on the brink of not being able to pay their insurance premiums. Who? Who? Of the 300 million Americans, who does not deserve health insurance? Tell us. Give us the category. Define for us the parameters within which people reside who do not deserve health insurance. Hello? That should be the first question out of Anderson Cooper's mouth or Wolf Blitzer's mouth or Brian Williams' mouth or whoever's mouth in this filthy corporate media is used to quiz these stand-up cardboard comedian candidates the next time. Simple question. I made it much longer than it needs to be. And then I think we ought to pay close attention to their answers, don't you? How about you little right-wing freak listening to this program? Do you think your mama doesn't deserve health insurance? Let's do some phone calls here before I get all thoroughly pissed off. Bob the Poet is calling from Tennessee, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Bob.
Hello, Mike.
How you doing?
Well, you know how it is. 2 years on and disappointment after disappointment.
Well, that's true. That's true.
I'm sure you recall that in September of 2005, Michael Brown went and testified before Congress. And a few days later, I wrote up something I'd like to share with you.
Sure, go ahead.
It's called Superhero Tragic Comic Book. Captain Incompetent, the superhero resume readers know as Fudge Brownie, unmannered crony of a horse's ass who tries to pass as president, trotted past the pot at the chamber door to settle a score of supposed insult concerning the tumult he ignored after Katrina roared through the hapless city. Without pity, he then fingered those who malingered, as he saw it, and chose to sit instead of flee. Although to me and you who know, no way to go was offered them, and chose for him was a turd word that blossomed in the malevolent mind, it's sad to find, of the resident maledicent advisor to the president. Then insolent captain incompetent unbent his super finger and sent a zinger at the mayor. Then a major slander at the heart-sore governor. And finally flipped some excrement on a media not subservient, responsible for his subsequent embarrassment when he had to face this president who must regret that he said publicly, "You're doing a heck of a job, Brownie."
Yeah, that's good, Bob. That's good. All right. Thanks for sharing that with us, Bob. All right. Take care. God, I was going to say something. Just totally slipped my mind here. Oh, well. Phil is calling from San Diego, listening where? KLSD or the Internet?
Yeah, it's still hanging in there.
Oh, it's still hanging in? Okay. Yeah. Welcome to the program, Phil.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Bob, man, Bob is awesome with the talking about, man, so poetic.
Yeah, right. Bob, that's Bob the poet. Bob the poet.
Those voices that you played, the voices about Katrina, just, man alive, they could make a musical about that. Like, instead of the Music Man, just call it the Lie Sick Man.
Yeah, really.
I'm getting these out of the way because I wanted to say something to you about, instead of business, just call it Bushness. But mainly what I wanted to tell you was I heard something on Tom Hartman this morning. Maybe you've heard this before, but it's pretty astounding because he compared Lyndon Johnson, the president, with to me, not even a president, this about the hurricane thing, because I guess it was like over 40 years ago. The same thing happened with President Johnson, where his way of showing his how he reacted mm-hmm. within 5 days,
yeah.
One day. He just showed up, and mm-hmm. nobody knew who he was because he was incognito. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't want to be showing off who he was. And he just, like, had stuff on that made him, like, not be easy to recognize. And he just opened his mouth because somebody said, "Who are you?" And he goes, "I'm here to help you." And then Tom goes, "And what does the shrub do in 5 days?" He sits and eats cake with John McCain.
Yeah.
What yeah. a comparison.
Yeah, I think you can, I think even the psychopath Dick Nixon was probably. Oh, never mind. I was gonna compare Nixon and Bush, and that's like comparing Satan and Beelzebub. There's no way to never mind.
Yeah, thanks for being there, Mike.
All right, Phil. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate your call. Michael is calling from the Bronx, New York. Michael, I haven't heard from you in a month of Sundays. How you doing?
Hey, Mike. Great to talk to you again.
My
been
pleasure.
Been a long while, buddy.
Yeah, it has.
How you feeling?
Compared to what?
In general, I mean, we can go with general. It sounds like you're in
good health and everything. Yeah, I'm doing all right. Pneumonia's a bitch. Got over it. Had it. Got over it. Almost killed me, but I'm back. Hold on, Michael. I got to do a break here. We'll come back and chat with Michael in the Bronx. Tim is calling from San Francisco. Will is calling from Michigan. Charles from Connecticut. No women want to call the program tonight? Okay. All right. That's right. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Things ain't changed. You okay? Then it hit me. Ain't nobody coming to get me. No one feels my pain.
once again, the color of my skin reminds me things ain't changed.
Over a million people evacuated and scattered. It's an amazing period in our history when you think about it.
But not as amazing as the day you were born, Georgie. I know what I was trying to think of before I go back to Michael here. It was the last time we played that montage of sound from immediate post-Katrina. The next day, I got fired from Air America. One of our regular correspondents pointed that out to me. That's true. So what does that mean, Kathy? It was a year ago tomorrow that I got fired from Air America. God, that network is disappearing, isn't it? I hate to say that, but... And let's see, we're still waiting for our severance pay, aren't we? Yeah, still waiting for severance pay and a reason why we were fired. But I digress. Back to Michael, who has called from the Bronx, listening on the Internet. Sorry to say, Michael, wish we were on a radio station there, but I don't think that will ever happen. So, now, where were we?
You were with me.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but like I said, we missed you, man. But, you know, I hear all these clips about Bush and all the stuff that he's saying, and I'm like, let's cut the crap already. I mean, we're talking, they want to keep talking about the millions of people misplaced and so forth. The unresolved issue I have, buddy, is the criminality behind all of this before Katrina, during, even afterwards. Let's not forget how he, or someone from his administration, I'm going to throw Karl Rove's name into this, someone gave an executive order to cease all public transportation to and from New Orleans about 24 hours before the official evacuation order was given. This is public transportation in which the middle and low-income class households, namely minorities mostly, needed to evacuate from Katrina, but they were stuck to brave the storm of Katrina. And then you remember afterwards that they were waiting 5 days before Bush even showed his grubby face around. And, you know, the thing is also, Mike, that when that Minneapolis bridge collapsed, what was it, a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
And then Bush is there in Minneapolis on a photo shoot saying we're going to rebuild the bridge, or rebuild Minneapolis. I'm saying to myself, please, you couldn't even handle New Orleans. That's why I'm warning the people in Minneapolis, although I feel for them as much as I feel for New Orleans. Don't trust Bush, don't believe into it, because, you know, this guy, this oil, money-grubbing, dictating wannabe, you know, you just simply can't trust him. He's as slippery as a bucket of oil.
Yeah, that's very true. Michael, thanks for checking in, pal. I appreciate it. Don't be a stranger now. You know how to listen to the program, so check in with us again. You know the post levee breaking disaster that hit New Orleans and the post Hurricane Katrina disaster that hit the Mississippi coast. When you think about the response immediately after, and then think about the circumstances around 9/11. How are Michael made me think of this when he was talking. Are we supposed to believe that in both instances, the attack on 9/11 and the natural disaster on August 29th, are we supposed to believe that all of the subsequent, in the case of Katrina and the pre-event incidences that happen where it concerns 9/11, that all of that was incompetence, a mistake, nobody was thinking, an accident. You heard the voices, Ray Nagin, or not Ray Nagin, but the head of Jefferson Parish, Broussard talking about how when they sent fuel oil down there to help them out, or water, whatever, FEMA would not let them unload the trucks. Are we to believe, and this is what the Bush thugs want us to believe, that all of this, they will take incompetence before they will admit to the fact that in both instances they had a hand in it. You know, I will believe that on my deathbed. I will believe that, just like I will believe. I don't care how many of these pissy experts come out and tell me that Lee Harvey Oswald was the only person who took shots at John Kennedy on November 22nd, 1963. I don't care how many people say that. I am not a stupid human being. I don't care how many self-styled experts or sweep-it-under-the-rug dudes try to tell me that the events of September 11th were just pure circumstance, the result of excellent planning by 19 people with box cutters. And I will never accept that the disaster that occurred on the Mississippi Gulf Coast in this country 2 years ago today was the result of, the perfect storm, a nexus of events that, oh gosh, who knew the levees would break? Who knew all of these disasters would happen? Stop it. Don't even for a minute expect somebody with the sense God gave a sack of doorknobs to believe all three of those horrific incidences were just circumstances.
Sound like to me I can hear this morning people. Death bell ringing all in my ear. Sound like to me, I can hear this morning, people.
Millions of people, or over a million people, evacuated and scattered. It's an amazing period in our history when you think about it.
It's about 25 before the hour. Both Marty and Andrew have written in regarding the bridge that Michael in the Bronx was concerned about, the bridge in Minneapolis. Andrew says, Mike, your caller's wrong. The bridge in Minneapolis will be fixed. This is where the 2008 Republican National Convention is being held. And Marty says, Mike, remember the Minneapolis-St. Paul area is where the thugs will hold their nominating convention / sideshow / ritual. Yeah, isn't that going to be... an interesting event, huh? All right, back to phone calls. Will is calling from Michigan, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Will.
Hey, Mike. I'm just flabbergasted at what you've been talking about tonight. We can spend half $1 trillion on death and destruction in Iraq, but we can't throw any money at the Gulf Coast to rebuild it.
Yeah, well, there's money in the death business and there's money in the Jesus business. Those are two of the biggest businesses in the United States right now, in terms of theft, thievery, lies, deceit, the Jesus business and the death business.
Yeah, I guess. I don't understand why there aren't more people in the street and just bringing the government to a halt.
Well, that's something we talk about a lot on this program. The only thing I can think of is it's either fear, of actually getting out and doing something, or it's just simply exhaustion, just pure exhaustion. I don't know. What I do know is, you know, I've just stopped beating myself up and other people because we're not in the street. If the time comes when, and I think we'll all know when it is time to go to the streets, then I think people will be there. And I've said before, the next demonstration I go to armed. That's how I feel about it.
Frederick Douglass said, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will.
Sure.
Why are we being so polite with our public officials? I mean,
Well, how many people are familiar with the sayings of Frederick Douglass, or the sayings of Mao, for that matter? They were pretty similar. Not that I'm a Maoist by any means, but you know, when it comes to revolutionary statements, you get them where you get them. I don't know why people are complacent. I don't know. Most of us don't read that sort of thing. Most of us, I have to believe, Will, that it's because we're exhausted, or because we're afraid. I can't think of any other reason. Now, being exhausted is a good reason not to do anything. Being afraid is another one. I'm not talking about groundless, baseless fears, but you and I having this phone call right now are subject to one of George Bush's recent directives, where every asset you have, every asset I have, can be seized, and you and I can be turned out in the street tomorrow, because what we are obliquely discussing, but we're still discussing it, is an interruption of the establishment of democracy in Iraq. So I think a lot of people are aware that the game has changed so radically. There have been so many presidential directives written and ordered and filed and codified that people like you and me, or the people listening to this program, or people who might take to the streets, at this point are truly risking perhaps more than they want to risk. With the movement of this artillery battalion to Washington, D.C. for active duty for the next year, and so on and so forth, I think people are beginning to understand that the Bush crime family, the only salvation here is to remove these son of a bitches from office, either in the 2008 election or before, as long as it's legal and peaceful. So, Will, that's all I can say. I understand your question. I've been asking that question for 3 years. But I'm just tired of kicking my own ass and kicking the ass of people who listen to this program saying, why aren't we out in the streets? I know why we're not out in the streets. Will?
I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm willing to put myself in harm's way just as much as the Bush administration is willing to put our sons and daughters in harm's way for
I hear you.
An unnecessary and unprovoked war.
Absolutely.
I made a speech yesterday at an anti-war rally on the Capitol steps here in Lansing, Michigan.
Yeah.
And I posted the audio on my blog. It's one.angrypatriot.us.
Oneangrypatriot.us.
I would have offered you the opportunity to play the audio on the on air, but it's not appropriate. It might get you fined by the FCC.
You said some bad words. I hear it. All right, I'll go listen to it anyway. Thanks, Will.
Okay.
I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Oh, God, what's this? All right, never mind. Tim is calling from San Francisco. Tim is listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Tim.
Hey, my brother. How you doing? And actually, that's a webcast.
Oh, you're listening via the Internet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for some reason, they don't have you on here in San Francisco right now, so I'm kind of...
I'm on.
What's happened to that? I thought you were so good at this time slot.
Well, I was. I'm still on the new formatted station, but we're on when most people are in bed.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, you know, well, whatever, but I understand. All right. But first of all, let's get to New Orleans. Now, I found a link to a...
I just wanted to say thank you to Mr. Edwards.
Hello?
Yeah, I don't know what that was. Never mind. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Okay, everybody, Google explosion on New Orleans levees. There's there are some witnesses in that thing that say they saw it blown.
Explosion on New Orleans levee.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember the stories that came out about that. People who lived in the area. I understand. I mean, what are you going to do? I said earlier in the program tonight, I will never believe that what happened.
I heard you.
Was strictly circumstance.
Yeah, you're right on there. But then I guess I figured I knew that from the beginning. Now, and also, you know, like the movie Zeitgeist that I've been promoting, that'll tell you why and who did the job, because it's like it all stems from the same thing. All of this stuff that's going on, I mean, you can say the Disclosure Project, you can say Freedom to Fascism, Zeitgeist, it's all rolled into one big bundle.
And well, let me just interrupt. Let me interrupt, Tim.
Sure.
I watched the Zeitgeist movie. It's in three sections. It runs an hour and 56 minutes, and I have to tell you, the first two sections were very interesting, but the third section to me was a bunch of horse snot.
You don't believe the Federal Reserve thing?
This idea of mysterious global bankers who are running everything and so on and so forth. There were so many holes in that third section that can be easily verified as being untrue.
Okay.
Wait a minute, let me finish. While I say that the movie is a good one and I think everybody should download it for free and look at it, zeitgeistmovie.com, there's some stuff in the third section that is just absolute nonsense, okay? And that's coming from somebody who has made my case very plain about how I feel about, I don't have any problem when somebody says, you must have your tinfoil hat on. I just look at them or give them the middle finger or something. But the third section of the Zeitgeist movie it just got too much BS in it for my taste. That's all.
Okay. Well, I just don't know what it was. That,
well, I don't know either. I'd have to go back and look at the whole movie, and obviously I'm not going to do that. I didn't take notes. I just remember in watching the Zeitgeist movie, I remember thinking while I was watching it, well, that's not true. Or this is not true, or that part is absolutely not true. So there's some stuff in there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's
I
some
have
stuff.
Not read anybody talking. About
there's
that,
some so. Stuff in there that is just factually incorrect, and that's when I start to doubt the entire thing that I'm looking at. When I start to find things that are not true. I start to think, what about this? All right, Tim, I have to leave it there. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Drew is calling from San Diego, listening on KLSD. Drew, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. I was telling your call screener that I was kind of torn between the whole health care issue. I do believe that everybody deserves health care. My only problem
Hold on a second, Drew. I didn't realize how close we were to the break. Let me put you on hold. We'll come back and pick it up after this break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
I don't think anybody anticipated the breach of the levees. I can remember people's hollering for trailers. People in faraway places like Washington, D.C. still hear you.
Oh, God. Thanks to the usual crew who put the program together tonight. Ian Huff, who engineered at our flagship station in Phoenix, KPHX. Thanks to Billy Foster, our chat room moderator. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Moderators at MikeMalloy.com. And our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Now, we were talking right before the break with Drew, who's called in from San Diego, and you were saying something about health care?
Yeah, I was saying about health care is that I'm kind of torn between free health care and what we have now. What we have now is a total joke. I don't agree with it. And the problem is that a lot of people want handouts nowadays, and that's what I'm not
Who are these lot of people?
I'm talking about just anybody who wants just like what Kennedy said, you know, not ask what your
wait. Don't go back to a president who was president before you were even born.
Correct.
That's just nonsense. I'm asking you about your statement. A lot of people want handouts. Who wants handouts? America is working its ass off. People
I agree.
Are working.
I agree.
Hold on a second, Drew. People are holding 2 and 3 jobs in order to keep their houses. Who is it that you are referring to when you say a lot of people want handouts? That's
okay.
A. While you're thinking of that answer, here's B. If your mother or your child or your spouse could not afford health insurance and needed to go to a doctor, and if he or she did not get to a doctor or a hospital, he or she was going to die, would you have the same attitude?
I agree with you.
No. I asked you 2 specific questions. Who are the lot of people, and what would you do if it were one of your family members who is desperately, critically ill and could not get care, and you couldn't afford it?
I would want them to get taken care of.
Okay, so who are these lot of people?
For instance, people who are not working. I just want people.
No, wait a second. People who are not working. What are you talking about? People who
okay,
are not.
Okay, Mike. Just let me.
No. I'm not going to let you continue. I'm not going to let you continue when you are making statements that are ridiculous. People who are not working have health insurance if they want it. It's called Medicaid. Now, the people who are definitely suffering are the so-called middle class, the working poor.
I hear you.
People who cannot afford to have a vicious, snake-like third party, a health insurance company, ripping them off and denying them coverage. Who are the lot of people?
I want people to put into it, Mike. I want them to give 4 years
Drew,
of public service.
What do you think? Where do you think your taxes go? Are you happy contributing hundreds of billions of dollars to murder people in Iraq?
No.
Or
no.
Would you like to see that tax money? Would you like to see that tax money go into a fund to provide health insurance for all Americans? Which would you prefer, Drew?
I don't want $1 to go overseas to fight a war.
Oh, Jesus. All right. Listen, Drew, I appreciate it. Thanks. Never mind. I'm over conversations like this. I really am. I don't know where you're coming from. I don't know what your point is. You must be one of these half-witted libertarians who just want to smoke dope and not have anything against the law or the government involved in anything. Which is just a jackass idea. It really doesn't work. You live in the year 2000 in a nation of 300 million people on a planet that's overpopulated with 8 billion, with an atmosphere that is slowly suffocating everybody. You and your goddamn libertarian ideas make about as much sense as boobs on a bull. Now grow up. Every libertarian, right libertarian I've ever met is a thumb-sucking 3-year-old. I want it my way. Don't tell me what to do. I'm sick of you people. Where in the hell do you think you live? On an island with 50 people? Start with your family, Drew, and work outwards, huh? Who in your family would you deny health care to? How about you? How about you standing there with a burst appendix and no health care? What are you going to do, Drew? Huh? You looking for a handout? How about your child who develops acute tonsillitis and dies of an infection because you don't have money to go to a doctor and get a shot or go to a hospital and have it removed? Is that what you want, Drew? Now work out from that. Keep going. You decide. Go ahead. Play God. Who lives, who dies because of health care? Go ahead. Libertarian smartasses. I hate them all. I'm sorry, Drew. You pissed me off. That's why I'm screaming at you. You just pissed me off. That attitude of, well, I'm kind of torn between it. I don't know. What is it you don't know? Do the Canadians want handouts? Do the British? Do all the people who exist in a civilized society that recognizes universal health care the same way we used to recognize universal education, that it should be available for everybody, and if you don't like the quality of it, whether it's education or universal health care, then you can go to a private school or you can go to a private physician, but it's available to everybody. Looking for handouts. You sound like George Bush. And don't give me that Ron Paul crap. You know, Ron Paul is a right-wing freak nutcase. He's just like Neil Bortz and the rest of these so-called right libertarians. I've got mine. Screw you. I'm tired of you people looking for handouts. You know, I really am. So like I say, to test the strength of your commitment there, Drew, just start with your own family. Start with you in the center and work out. And send me an email sometime and tell me which people, as you work out through the circle and into the general population, which people would you deny health care to? Huh? Jesus. I'll see you tomorrow night, True Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NOVAM Radio.
A quill tune that's in the air. I dream of oleander the June. That's when I'm wishing that I was there. Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans? When that's where you left your heart. And there's something more I miss to wanna care for.